In the same Torah portion, the Torah is talking about two wars. Number one, there's a war against the nation of Midian. And as the Torah itself calls it, it's a war of vengeance to punish the Midian nation. Why is that? They originally were trying to fight the Jews. Then they realized that they cannot win. And they also saw that other nations that were trying to attack Jews were not successful. So then they realized that probably something is going on beyond just the laws of nature. Today, we consider ourselves usually very smart. Because of that, as we think, we only pay attention to the natural causes of every effect. Back then, apparently people were smarter and they were realizing that there is more to this world besides for physical nature. And they were realizing that if somebody is defying laws of physical nature, probably there is something higher that is helping him to do that. So they saw that Jews are these nomads, for all intents and purposes, who just ran away from slavery. They never trained for fighting wars. They don't have any army. They are defending themselves with their pots and pans, and they are warding off every attack of every most advanced, by those standards, nation. And not only that, these people don't have their own land, and they are fighting against the nations that have home advantage. It's their territory. Something has to be going on over there. So that's why the nation of Midian invited a non-Jewish prophet who was supposed to curse the Jewish nation. Bilam was called to see what can be done on metaphysical level to help defeat the Jews. And Bilam, as the famous story goes, was trying to curse the Jews, but the opposite has come out. Instead of cursing the Jews, he blessed them, and the head of the Midian nation, Balak, the king of Midianites, got very upset, but he realized what's going on over there. He realized that Jews have a protection from above. They have this help from God, and he decided now, he was not relenting, he decided now to tackle the problem from a different angle. He said, okay, if Jews have this protection from God, then let's see what can we do to take away this protection. And he found out that this God that is helping Jews gave them the Torah. He said, let's read what says in this Torah. And this Torah has many prohibitions and some of most egregious violations which are described in the Torah is sexual promiscuity. So Balak says, okay, so that means that if I will be able to seduce Jews into inappropriate intimate relationships, the God that is protecting them now is going to get upset at them and he'll stop protecting them. So then I'll be able to defeat them. And this was the plan that he devised. So now Balak is hiring an army of prostitutes. And believe it or not, the army of prostitutes proved itself to be more effective than the army of soldiers and warriors that were trying to kill the Jews. Because this army of prostitutes has come into the Jewish camp, and believe it or not, before you know it, these nice Jewish guys are all running around with these girls of questionable behavior. And not only that, there is one trend which you probably know, we can always see in the world. If somebody does something that he feels guilty about, to quench his guilt, he's trying to convince others to do it and claim that it's cool. pretending that something is cool or making something cool is just a way of coping with your guilt. So because some of the biggest celebrities of those days got involved with these women of questionable moral standards, they led behind them all other Jews, and it suddenly became a fad. We always know that celebrities, famous politicians or famous actors or famous singers or famous athletes are not always known for their moral behavior. They're not the most moral people of our society. And there is a reason for it. So there, these celebrities were the first ones to fall prey to these women that were coming from media. And it suddenly became cool to get involved with prostitutes. And then the whole story of Pinchas happened, when Pinchas saw what was going on and he stopped somebody on his tracks. Literally, there was a person who was openly in front of other people getting involved with a Midianite woman, and he came and he killed both of them with a spear. He was risking his life by doing so, because obviously these people had the whole army of people cheering them on during their activity. And these people were about to stampede Pinchas to his death. He miraculously survives, and then the Jews are realizing that maybe we need to think about what we are doing. It was like a wake-up call for everyone. After all of these events, God tells to Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, we've had enough. These Midianites need to be punished. They will not stop. They're trying every way possible, and they're going to be your neighbors. So you better make sure that they know not to start up with you next time. And there is a war of vengeance which is announced against the nation of Midian. And this is what is described in the Torah, in our Torah portion. Then, just a little bit later, there's another war which is described in our Torah portion. God is telling to the Jews about conquering the land of Israel. It's a war of getting back our Jewish land. Just for perspective, maybe it's not needed to be mentioned, but just to be clear, Jews lived in this land from the times of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And when Abraham came to this land, when Avram came to this land, he came to the land that was originally when the three sons of Noah, who were settling in different parts of the world, were taking their own territory. Land of Israel was in a territory of Shem, Semitic nations. That's why Jews are called Semites, and those that don't like Jews are called anti-Semites. So land of Israel was part of Semitic nations, but it happened to be right next to Africa, where you had African nations living. And even though originally land of Israel was a Semitic territory, Africans have conquered it, and they settled in this land. It's called Eretz Canaan, land of Canaan. Canaan, or Canaan, was an African nation. They settled there, they conquered it from their neighbors. So when Avram came to this land, Avram being a Semite, being a Jew, Avram came to his ancestral Semitic land. And the local nations didn't seem to mind. Nobody was trying to kick him out. He had neighborly disagreements with other people around, but as a whole, nobody was telling him, it's not your land, get out of here. Why? Because it was their land. Because it was his land. It's the other nations who came there without a visa. And we know that when Avram's wife Sarah passed away, he wanted to purchase a city of Hebron, the city of Hebron, and the local king, Ephron, said, no, it's fine, you could take it for free. And Avram insisted on buying it for money. So overall, Avram had a good relationship with his neighbors. Then after Avram, Isaac, and Jacob with his kids live on this land for a while, they go to Egypt for 210 years. When they come back, after two centuries, this is when these African nations have already spread themselves all over this land, and they don't want to let the Jews in. It's somewhat similar to what was going on in the USSR when, during World War II, Jews were evacuated, and the non-Jews who lived there and stayed there through the war took their houses, took their apartments, took their possessions. And then Jews came back, and these locals were not exactly happy with that. And this was happening not only in the USSR, it was even more tragically going on in Poland, because there's a lot of terrible, terrible stories how Jews who survived the Holocaust, Jews who survived concentration camps, came back to their homes, their own houses in Poland, and were killed by the locals in Poland because these locals did not want these Jews to take their houses back. There were pogroms. There was a huge wave of pogroms in Poland in 1945. So what was going on in the land of Israel was similar to that. Jews are coming back, and these locals are, we took your houses to ourselves for our own kids. We don't want you here. So Jews had to fight for their land. So there are two wars, which are described in this week's Torah portion. The war over vengeance, war against Midian, and the war of conquering of land of Israel, war against the nations that settled in the land of Israel, the African nations of Canaan. Two different wars. An interesting detail. I want to ask you a question. Does the tribe of Levi, have to fight in the war? I will warn you, whatever answer you will give is going to be the right answer. Why? Because, as many times with Jews, it depends! So this is the answer. In some wars, Levim have to fight. In some wars, Levim do not have to fight. Okay. So far, so good. But the question is, which wars do they have to fight and which wars do they not have to fight? And this is where we find a strange situation. In the war of Midian, Jews have to fight. War of vengeance. In the war of conquering of land of Israel, Levim do not have to fight. You would think the other way around. The War of Midian is a military operation to punish the enemy. So there are people who are learning the Torah their entire life, and they are teaching the Torah to the entire Jewish nation. Their job is solely holy occupation. So people who are preoccupied with holiness do not have to fight a war of vengeance. But if we are conquering the land of Israel, first of all, Levim also going to be living in the land of Israel. It's also their land. To conquer the land of Israel, you would think it's a holy war. This is a war that everybody should be involved in. But Levim do not have to fight it. But here's another interesting caveat. After Jews have settled in the land of Israel, Jews have been involved in many wars. And Jews have been involved in wars where they would be conquering neighboring territories for whatever reason it was. The Torah allows, the Torah explains there's such a thing as milchemet mitzvah. If somebody attacks you to defend your land, is milchemet mitzvah, it's a mitzvah to fight. Then there's also milchemet reshut, a war that, according to the Torah, is allowed, and it's up to the kings and the local Jewish authorities or federal Jewish authorities to decide if you should be involved in these wars. For example, defending your interests. If nobody is attacking your land, but they are attacking the economic economic resources of your land, they are closing down the roads or the straits, the rivers that come into your land. If somebody is attacking a nation that is the only partner you have to manufacture something which is of life importance to you. So these are not defensive wars necessarily. You're not defending your land, but you're defending your interests. So this is called Milchemet Reshut. This is, Torah says you don't have to fight those wars. If somebody attacks you in the land of Israel, you have to fight these wars. You have to fight them. You don't have a choice. If somebody attacks your interests, or if there is a territory which is of your interest. Another thing, if there is a territory, let's say there's a highland from which Jews are being shot at all the time, and Jews decide, you know what, we need to go and take this territory. It's not, we are not defending the strict definitions of our land. We are conquering new territory, but we are conquering it for a purpose. So here Torah says, there's no mitzvah to conquer it, but your kings and your authorities have to make a calculation. Your generals have to make a calculation. And if they decide that you should conquer it, then it's called Milchemet Reshut. It's a war that you can wage. Okay? Now, throughout the Tanakh, Jews have been waging many optional wars, Milchemet Reshut, like that. So here's an interesting point. Levim were obligated to be part of these wars as well. One second. These are optional wars. These are wars that are defending Jewish interests. You're not conquering land of Israel. You're conquering somebody else's land. It makes sense the other way around. Levim should be involved in conquering the Jewish land. Levim should not be involved in conquering somebody else's land. Makes no sense whatsoever. So let's try to figure it out here. We all have one purpose in this world: to fill this world with holiness. This is one and only purpose we all have. Levim, not Levim, doesn't matter. We all have to fill in this world with godliness, with holiness, with the Torah, with mitzvahs. Now, there are two territories, two types of territories that need to be filled in with godliness. Those that are already predestined to be godly, and those that are not godly right now, they were not predestined to be godly. These are the new territories that we are conquering. For example, a shul, a synagogue, is a territory which is predestined to be godly. When I am learning the Torah in a synagogue, I am not conquering new territory for godliness. I am filling in pre-existing territory which is designed to be godly with godliness. I am using a space for what it was meant to be used for. When I'm sitting in my office in the area that there's nobody Jewish whole block around, and in my office I'm putting up a mezuzah, and in my office I'm learning the Torah. If I'm learning the Torah in my office, I'm conquering new territory for godliness. If I'm buying a new house, and now I'm putting a mezuzah in this house, and I'm making kosher kitchen, and I'm putting a pushka, a charity box in there, and I am making sure that everything in this house is going to be according to the Torah laws, I'm conquering a new territory. So these are two different territories that we Jews need to conquer. The territories that have been predestined to be holy, like a synagogue, a yeshiva, or streets on Park Heights Avenue. Streets off of Park Heights Avenue in Park Heights area. In Park Heights area, you walk around on Shabbos, you feel like you are in Yerushalayim. This is already a Jewish territory. When during the times of Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, many Jews were hoping to go to Israel, but not many Jews were able to because it was expensive, dangerous. Even physically, health-wise, many weren't able to do it. That's right. There was no El Al flights back then. So Tzemach Tzedek famously said then, Mach Eretz Israel Do, make Israel here. You cannot go to Israel, make Israel here. And it's true, there were shtetlach in Europe, in Russia, that were just like Israel. You walk around over there, it's a Jewish land. Non-Jews had to speak Yiddish over there because that was the only way to communicate. So you walk around the Park Heights neighborhoods, you're just like in Jerusalem. So that territory was already conquered. It's already there. So there's somebody who I know, a non-observant Jew who lives in that area. He says, If I drive somewhere, I park my car far away from my house, I feel bad walking. I feel bad driving there just because everybody's walking. I can't walk. I cannot drive through the streets when I have all these Jews walking nearby me. I feel guilty. That's already Jewishly conquered territory. But if you live in Stevenson, if you live up Park Heights Avenue, if you live elsewhere in Baltimore, Owings Mills, Reisterstown, for sure, off of Nicodemus Road. So then, that's already a completely different territory. These are the new territories that we need to conquer. So here is an interesting insight. Who is supposed to do these things? To conquer the territory which is already predestined to be holy, that, you know what? Levim don't have to do it. Why? The land of Israel was already predestined to Jews. It was already predestined to be Jewish. The land of Israel, when Jews are conquering the land of Israel, they are only fulfilling their prophecy. They are not bringing any novelty. There's nothing new spiritually in this world. So you know what? Levim will have to learn the Torah. Could sit back, continue learning the Torah. We're going to do it without you. But if you are talking about conquering new territory, bringing something new to God, like Milchemet Rashut, when you are conquering territories outside of the land of Israel, optional wars, or like War of Midian, which is the idea of vengeance for standing up against God, that's something new. That's not conquering what was predestined to be Jewish. Here, Levim have to take part because everybody has to be part of it. So here is an interesting thing. You would think that to be conquering the Jewish territories in the Jewish areas is for everyone. You know, to be Jewish in Park Heights, anybody can be Jewish in Park Heights. To learn Torah or to daven, to pray in the shul, anybody can do it. Outside of a shul, in Reisterstown, in Stevenson, that's already for some yeah, for some no. The answer is the other way around. Outside of the Jewish area, that's where everybody has to make sure to do more Jewish things. These are territories we need to conquer. Why? Because we Jews are here to conquer the world. Whenever people say that Jews are controlling the entire world, or Jews want to control the entire world, they are right. They are just misunderstanding how we do it. They think that we are conquering the entire world by controlling the banks and controlling media and controlling Hollywood. Jews control all the banks, including the West Bank. So this is why we Jews are here to control the world, but we are here not to control the world through banks and media. We are here to control the world in spiritual ways. We are here to influence the world in spiritual ways. We are here to conquer the world through Torah and mitzvahs. When I come and do a mitzvah in a place that nobody has done a mitzvah before, I'm conquering that territory. Baal Shem Tov once spoke about two of his students. Two of his students were traveling on a business trip, and back then Google Maps wasn't working so well yet, so they got lost. And they took a wrong turn in the road, the horse and buggy, didn't know exactly where they were going. They ended up somewhere in a field where they had no clue where they were. And it was summer, and they were thirsty, and they see a well. So they went over to this well, got water, made a blessing, drank the water. And then they started figuring out where to go, and quickly they found their way back. And they came back to Baal Shem Tov, and Baal Shem Tov said that you thought that you were lost and you didn't know what you were going, but did you notice you found your way back immediately after you took this drink of water on that in that place from this well and made a blessing? Do you know why? Because since the world was created, this area never heard a brocha, never heard a blessing, and God did not know how to make it that there was a name of God pronounced in this area. How a blessing will be said, a mitzvah will be done. And this place was completely desolate. There was no way to bring Jews there. So God made you get lost. And you traveled for hours and hours. We didn't know. And by the way, this is the reason why, it's interesting enough, there's no place where Jews are not living now or haven't lived in history. There's no country where Jews haven't lived. Why? For this very reason, every place needed to be used for mitzvah. And by the way, do you know, when originally America was discovered and people just started immigrating to America, we are talking even before the foundation of this country, before 1776, there were very conflicting opinions of rabbis about America. Most of rabbis were saying that you are not allowed to move to America because in America there's no Jewish life, there's no Jewish infrastructure, there's no kosher food. How are you going to move here? Your children will not be able to learn in yeshiva. So most of rabbis were saying the Jews should not move to America. There was a famous rabbi, Menashe ben Ephraim, who was a great Sephardic sage. He was a philosopher. Believe it or not, Alexander Hamilton was greatly influenced by his writings later. But at that time, he was pushing Jews to move to America. Why he was saying it's important to move to America? Because he said, Mashiach will come only after Jews will be in every place in this world. The entire world was created for us to do mitzvahs there. If there is a continent where Jews have not done mitzvahs yet, that means we did not fulfill our mission. We need to move to America to do more mitzvahs for Mashiach to come sooner.